Full Story is supported by Australian Industry Group, Australia's largest and most experienced industry association. From workplace laws to skills shortages and compliance, Australian businesses face challenges every day. Supporting over 60,000 businesses nationwide, Australian Industry Group is Australia's trusted business partner for compliance, advocacy and growth. Members enjoy the benefits of instant HR and legal advice, along with access to a team of experts in workplace relations, compliance, legal, skills development, apprenticeships, and more. Whether you're shaping strategy, managing people, or driving operations, Australian Industry Group exists to help businesses of all sizes thrive. Learn more and join today at australianindustrygroup.com.au.
Hi, John. Welcome to The Full Story.
Thanks for having me.
I want to get straight into a question that will give us a very clear sense of where you think America's headed under Donald Trump, and that's the midterms. It's a really crucial election coming up, perhaps a true referendum on how Americans feel about Donald Trump's rule. But do you think they're going to be free and fair?
You know, that is a question everyone asks here in America as well. And my view is we cannot predict the future and we can only worry about things that we can control. And so to the extent that we need to be filing lawsuits, if there is an attack from the administration on election infrastructure, we should do that. To the extent that we have to, you know, give people some sort of extra confidence that the more they show up and the bigger the margin in the midterms, the harder it's going to be for Donald Trump to create any confusion or chaos, then we should do that. But beyond that, I think what we have going for us is the system of federalism, which is that the national government here does not run the elections. The elections are run by the states. And so that makes it much more difficult for the federal government to mess around. Of course, you know, there's a number of things that we all worry about here, which is there's a large unaccountable paramilitary force roaming the streets of American cities right now. So you worry about Trump sending ICE or other federal agents around election polling places, even though that is explicitly forbidden, to intimidate people. You worry about, I actually worry about most about what happens after the election. If there are close races in certain districts, in certain states, then, you know, and there are recounts and all that, then you worry about Donald Trump and his allies sowing chaos.
So that's where the danger could be if things are close.
To me, that is where the danger is. Close races where the House is decided by a couple of very, very close races or the Senate, and then Trump steps in.
I understand there's, you know, the option of filing lawsuits. We don't want to quite predict the future, but Donald Trump has most recently been talking about nationalizing elections. I mean, do you think there might be a plan to prepare to rig the midterms, especially as the Trump administration, you know, has a bit of a history, recent history of not necessarily listening to court orders, not necessarily following the rules?
It's hard to know what he meant by nationalizing because they're not nationalized and no bill would ever pass Congress that would nationalize any elections. And so I'm not quite sure how he would do that. Of course, you know, after 2020, there was a discussion within the then first Trump administration about seizing voting machines. So there is that concern, of course. I feel somewhat confident that in many of the swing districts and swing states, there are Democratic governors in those states. So I think that makes his job tougher. Not impossible, but tougher. I'll put it this way. I think he would like to, for sure. I think his motivation is to do so. Whether he will be successful in doing so is another question. And I do think he faces a number of obstacles in that regard.
Fair enough. I mean, that FBI raid on Fulton County, Georgia, the seizure of the 2020 election records, that must have been concerning for you, such a deliberate move by the FBI. I mean, what did that signal to you?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there's two reasons that he is doing that. One is a backwards looking reason, which is he still believes he won in 2020, or at least wants people to believe that he won in 2020. And so he wants to relitigate that. And of course, you know, if the federal government is seizing ballots from the 2020 election, who knows what they'll say they found. But there's also a concern looking forward where, you know, and maybe this is where both of them come into play together, which is, oh, we found these ballots and it turns out 2020 was rigged after all. And so now we want to send, you know, federal observers to Fulton County to oversee the elections. And again, this all would have to be litigated through the court system. And while we do have a very conservative Supreme Court, in election matters, at least election matters like with this import, it has been difficult for Trump to find a majority on the court for some of his crazier election moves.
You mentioned the federal agents, and we're in Australia here. We obviously watch what's happening in the US very closely. And though that footage of the ICE agents shooting two US citizens practically point blank in Minnesota, that was very confronting for us all the way over the Pacific Ocean. I mean, what effect did that have on you when you first heard of that?
It's horrifying. It's probably one of the more horrifying things I've seen in American politics in my lifetime. And, you know, you mentioned the elections, but I do think, like, what keeps me up at night and what has kept me up at night since Trump took office again is what's going on with ICE and what's going on with these federal agents, because we have seen that they feel like they are unaccountable. They have a budget now the size of the Israeli military. They are sloppy in their recruitment and training, and they get court orders all the time to release someone that they have arrested or jailed, and sometimes they don't follow the court order. And clearly, when they killed Rene Good, and then the administration basically said federal agents have immunity to do whatever they want, of course we should expect that they would kill again, because they don't worry that they're going to get punished or held accountable for using too much force. Their worry is that they will lose their jobs or be held accountable for not making enough arrests, because Stephen Miller, the president's top advisor and maybe the most powerful person in the federal government after Donald Trump, has been demanding 3,000 arrests per day. Even with Stephen Miller demanding that, they're not achieving it. And so you have an unaccountable police force that's made up of increasingly more right-wing, fundamentalist, very ideologically extreme people, and they are roaming free. Now, the good news, if there's good news, in the wake of Alex Preddy's murder by these agents, the public outcry was so great that Trump has felt a little pressure to back down a little bit. And Tom Homan, who is now the new federal official in charge of ICE, just announced today they're drawing down about 700 agents from Minnesota. Now, there's still way too many.
Exactly. Yeah. There's still leaves about 2,000 left.
Right. But they are running up against the fact that people all over the country, but especially in Minneapolis, have courageously been out there on the streets, people who are not necessarily activists or organizers and are just doing this for the first time of their lives, out there filming what's happening and basically bearing witness to what the government is doing to make sure that the rest of the country knows. And public opinion, which has not been on their side on this issue for quite some time, is now quite lopsided against the administration over this.
Did you expect something like that after Trump won his second term?
I did. I mean, I don't know if I expected it to be this extreme this quickly, but knowing Stephen Miller's background and what he believes about immigration and what he believes about this country and what how Trump feels and Stephen Miller feels and J.D. Vance feels about protest in this country and dissent, you know, I did worry that this would happen. I don't know if I believed it would happen so soon, but this was always my biggest fear of a second Trump term.
You're Obama's former head speechwriter. You're a Democratic Party insider. With everything that's going on, I assumed the Democrats would nationally become really popular, and I was very surprised to look at some of the recent polls that still have the Democratic Party in the 30s in favorability. That's meant to be quite low. I mean, what are they doing wrong?
How much time do we have? I'll start with what is normal, right? Which is, we have no leader of the party right now. We are a leaderless party. And some of that is just because, you know, we lost the last election. We don't have an obvious nominee. We're going to head into a contentious primary in 2028, you know, which in some ways would be a good thing. But until then, you know, the leaders of the party are the leaders of in the Senate and the House, Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer, both of whom are, you know, you could debate how
charismatic they
good
are.
Of tacticians they are in within their caucuses, right? But in terms of like public communicators and charisma, not so much. I don't think anyone would rank them at the top of any list.
Yeah.
So therefore, you don't have a single voice in the party. You don't have a single leader, and I think that has hurt us. I also think we are now 10 years into this in the Trump era, and you lose once to Trump, and you try to say, okay, maybe it's an aberration, maybe I just got something wrong, and then, you know, Biden wins, and then we lose again to Trump. I think that a lot of Democratic politicians no longer trust their instincts about politics and about what the country wants and about what to say. And sometimes I think they are taking too much advice from looking for in too many different places. I always think that, you know, sometimes when they're talking about politics, it's like they're sort of reading the stage directions on this is what I'm supposed to say about this, and this is what people want to hear about this. And I worry that we don't have anyone right now that is sort of telling the larger story of where America is and where it should go and what this country should be in 2026 after a decade of Trump.
I want to pick up on that a bit, but do you think the Democrats have taken responsibility for the last loss to Donald Trump?
I think some have. I think others, not so much. You know, it was a mix of we ran a candidate who was too old to be running for president and who had presided over, you know, a level of inflation that, look, the rest of the world dealt with as well. But when everything's more expensive and the guy running the country can't really communicate effectively about where he wants to take the country and what he's achieved and what he has left to achieve, and the country's already fairly divided, that's a tough position to put the party in. Now, what lessons can you take from that as Democrats? Well, you know, don't preside over skyrocketing inflation is one. But also, you know, I also think that the way that Biden handled the border was a mistake as well. And so Democrats are learning from that. And, you know, it remains to be seen whether Democrats have learned the lessons of 2024. And we will know that, I think, not necessarily in the midterms, because midterms are more of a referendum on the party in power. But we will certainly learn that as we head into the 2028 primaries on the Democratic side.
I mean, I don't want to look back too much. We will look forward. But there was some reporting around the awareness that Pot Save America had about Joe Biden's decline in April 2024, a meeting. John Lovett said that your colleague said that he struggled about whether to speak out. I mean, do you reflect on that and think that perhaps things could be done differently? What's that big lesson there?
Yeah, the tricky part is a lot of people were concerned, but the inner circle around Biden was the inner circle, and everyone who was concerned would be told, don't worry, he's tired, he's this, he's that. And we were pretty honest about that whenever we talked about it, but we just didn't know how bad it was. And then certainly, at least on Pod Save America, we had seen him maybe a week before the debate, the infamous debate at a fundraiser in Los Angeles. We saw Biden and he was quite bad. It was the George Clooney fundraiser that has become somewhat famous now. And he was quite bad at that fundraiser and we were quite alarmed. But at the time we thought, okay, well, the debate is in a week and he either does great in the debate and maybe this is just, he was just really tired again and, you know, he'd flown across the world and whatever, or he'll be quite bad at the debate and then everyone will know. But it's only a week and a half away, so we'll just hang tight. And then I think that is why, after the debate, when he did so poorly, and a lot of Democrats were still defending Joe Biden and still saying he should stay in the race, we were like, we can't do that. We can't just go along. We have to be honest.
And you did. To be fair, you did come out and say we need a new candidate. But I guess just what's the lesson there? Would you do anything differently?
What would I do differently? I mean, I would I guess I would yell more about it on the pod, but they weren't big fans of us.
You mean the Biden team?
The Biden team. They were upset with us for long before we spoke out after the debate because they didn't think we were nice enough to Joe Biden they wouldn't put him on Pod Save America. So we could have yelled more, but I don't know that it would have made a difference for them. And I think that's true for a lot of people in the Democratic Party. It took Chuck Schumer going to Biden's house at the very end and basically showing him the polling that his advisors wouldn't show him and begging him to think of the country to finally get him to drop out. And so, like, when you're at that kind of extreme measure, you realize that people speaking out before that might not have made as much of a difference.
We'll be right back.